Welcome back. I'm Michael Dresser. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. We're going to have some fun now. Janice Fletcher with us. Janice is she's an educational consultant. She's an author, a speaker, and a trainer. Also the author of Wisdom from the Inner Teacher, Turning Ahas into Owl Moments, Optimal Wisdom Learning. Janice, hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, I think the word wisdom got lost someplace in the last 5 or 10 years. There's so many people out there that are confused because of the, you know, politics, the economy, the culture, and on and on and on. And they lose that inner self, that wisdom that we're all born with. I think we just cover it up, and sometimes it's hard to find.
Well, it's true. Wisdom is truth. It's insight. And my mission is to have people recognize that as they have aha moments, they happen occasionally, but they don't have to be occasional. They can be regular and expected.
And stop me if I'm wrong here. I am not a clinician with this, but is it, you know, we learn certain things. You come on to this earth, you know, you get born, and you're completely blank. There's nothing there on the slate. And then you start to learn. You start to learn how to protect yourself, how to survive. And pretty soon that learning process takes over. Isn't finding, and this is a question now, isn't finding that inner wisdom, that aha moment, isn't it a process of unlearning and relearning?
Exactly. We are most open to wisdom the younger we are, as you just stated. And then as the mind takes over and gets cluttered, then there's no time for the silence, which is actually when the wisdom comes in. And if you'll note, when an aha moment happens, it happens when you're in an alpha state. Your mind is in an alpha state. And so therefore, that's the unlearning that you're talking about, or keeping your mind empty for allowing it to come in and learning those patterns.
Yeah, and that's so hard to do for most people. You know, 2 or 3 seconds, if you could do that in today's world, is something to accomplish. Obviously, there has got to be the P word, process. There's got to be a process to be able to get you through that. And there's a 6-step from what you've done and you've created. What is that 6-step process?
Well, it's very simple, actually. It's recognition of the process that takes place each and every time that we have an aha moment. So it is happening to each of us. The first step is that you have a desire to know something or to learn something or to problem solve. There is a desire to know. And as you seek that information, you look in your mind and you look in the files and you look everywhere and you ask everybody and you Google and you do whatever you can do to find out the answer to 2 plus 2 or what is the universe purpose. And you don't come up with the answer. And when you don't come up with the answer, there comes a point where you reach the second step, and the second step is that you give up. And in that giving up process, you actually surrender. And biologically speaking, when you surrender, what happens is your left mind, the busy mind, the mind that's trying to problem solve and figure it out with linear thought and so on, shuts down and gets quiet because you've given up.
Okay, so what we're really saying here, and stop me again if I'm wrong, this is a biological and a chemical process, and basically understanding the different parts of your mind. You don't have to be, you don't have to be an Einstein with it, but just the base understanding of how it works and how you're affected by that inner working.
Mm-hmm. You can look at this process from neuroscientifically or biologically, psychologically, spiritually, or physiologically, whichever way you want to look at it, there's an interpretation for it either way.
Whatever it works, it all starts with the thought. The thought is what triggers that entire process you just talked about,
and based on
your experience, that's how you're going to react.
Yes, well, you're going to have the desire. You will give up at some point in time. There will be a surrender, and you know, from the spiritual sense, that's really huge. And you know, what's 2 plus 2? I give up, and then it pops in later on. But then after you surrender, you go into the third step, and the third step is actually, as I said, when the mind is still and the left brain shuts down, which means that you're in an alpha state then. Then you might be walking your dog or taking a shower or half asleep or whatever. And wherever your alpha state comes in, but that's when the truth, the wisdom will pop in, the insight, the aha. And the brain actually literally does light up. You know, that we say, oh my gosh, the light bulb went off. It really does in your brain.
You know, that happens, but how do we know that between, and there's that aha moment, but then it's got to transition to the owl moment? How do we know when that's happening? What I have found over the years, we got two little voices inside of us. The first voice you hear is the one that says, no, you can't, based on your experience and your behavior and what you think you have to protect yourself from in the world. And then if you just stop for a minute and get quiet, like you're talking about, that other voice pops up. And it's that other voice, it's got to be the owl voice.
Yes, the difference between an aha and an owl moment is the actual recognition of the process. You know, understanding what the process is and then embracing that process and being open to it and expecting it. So it's not just a random occasional aha that everybody has. But no, I live in a state of having owl moments, which means I am inviting wisdom and I know it's going to happen. And when I do get stuck, I know my process and I know that, you know, I have to just shut down the computer and go to bed and figure it out tomorrow, or I have to, you know, talk to somebody else or brainstorm or take a walk or whatever I have to do. And then at some point in time, you can't demand it, but you can allow yourself to be ready for it to happen. You can set the conditions. So it's about knowing thyself, as Socrates said, and getting to know that for me, Janice, usually mine, like the epilogue in my book, it was written at 2:52 in the morning. I popped up out of bed, wrote the whole thing, never had to edit a word, because the other interesting thing about an aha moment or an owl moment is that you never second guess the wisdom. You know it's true.
Now, by the way, the owl moment in and of itself, that's really for everybody. You know, that sounds like it crosses gender lines, ethnicity, whatever the case may be. It sounds like that's the base, no matter where you are, what language you speak, and what culture you're brought up in. It's all the same thing when you get to the inner self.
It is just being human, yes.
Yeah, which has got to be kind of tough for most people. Now, where was it when you got up, you started writing it, and did it just come out of you at that moment? What brought you up to that point? Was there any struggles you were going through that caused that to happen?
Well, in that particular owl moment, you know, I have all sorts of examples of owl moments in my book, you know, from mistakes that I made, not listening to the truth, blah, blah. But this particular one about the epilogue of the book, I guess you could say the struggle of writing the entire book was part of that. And I actually thought it was finished. I had finished it. I had done in every chapter. It had been edited over and over and over. And but then I woke up, and that's oftentimes where my ahas come in, is when I'm in that dreamy, half-asleep state. And I tried to roll over and go to sleep, and I tried it again. I was like, no. And I just sat at my computer, and it just wrote itself. And my husband, who's a writer also and helps me edit, looked at it, and he said, not a word needs to be changed, because it was truth.
Did that put a smile on your face?
Yeah.
It's
so rare as an author to hear that, right?
That's good. But there is an area which is interesting, and I've it seems the same with everybody, if you're a writer, whether it's fact, fiction, whatever the case may be, there comes that time that when you're writing, when you get that aha moment, there's a discovery of self within whatever the subject matter is, and it doesn't have to, and it could be fantasy. Where was that for you? Where did you really realize and saw yourself within this process?
I had written a book called, what was the name of it? I don't even remember now. I had finished the entire book, and I went on my annual trip to India. And I went to India, and I got there, and I met a woman, and she talked to me about my book. And in 24 hours, she said, that's not you. You have to expand your book. You have to write it so that it has a bigger audience, because I'm an educator. She said, it's not just for educators. It's for everybody, because everybody's human. And you have to rewrite it. And I just looked at her like she was insane, because I just got it finished. But then I digested that, and then it started. And then the new message came forth, and wisdom from the inner teacher then was rewritten out of my other book. So that's probably the struggle, you know. I wrote an entire book and then had to rewrite it.
But when you did, you mentioned your husband a moment ago. When you did that open up a communication between the two of you that you hadn't had before? Because if you're talking about that owl moment, that inner self, and being experiencing it, you had to look at life differently. And there had to been a whole level of communication that the two of you didn't have before this.
Well, it's interesting. He writes screenplays, and so one of our greatest pastimes is writing together, my reading, his writing, and his reading, my writing, and helping each other, and so on and so forth.
Sure.
But there had not been a time, because he's the official writer, not me, right? Although I have the published book, he is. And
yeah, we had to get that little one-upmanship. I hope he's listening. We got you. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, so him being the official writer, yes, when he said that, it was like I had arrived, if you will, you know?
Yeah.
But actually what really happened is that I'd lived the message of the book.
Yeah. And if you live the message of the book, when you really get to that point of living that inner self, it does. It changes relationships in all different areas of your life because you've got to be able to look at the world completely different than you defined it before you got it.
It's much less intimidating because you have truth available to you, right? And you know it's there, and you know wisdom is going to come through, and you know, and you've learned that the conditions that your body needs, you know, or what your mind needs, and so you can allow them to come forth, and then therefore the anxiety leaves because you know that it's just a matter of time. Like my friend who has a dying wife, you know, he had to make a decision about the cancer and radiation, and he just told the doctor, I'm going to need 3 days. You know, I just have to think about this. And he knew he needed 3 days to process, to come up with the answer. So we just have to know thyself, and then life becomes easier because we have access to the inner wisdom.
Okay, but when you have access to the wisdom and you do know, if let's go back to that scenario again. Had he known, if he understood that there was known that there was an all wisdom there, could he have made the decision in a moment?
Well, you can't demand aha moments. No, you can't demand them. But the interesting part about them is that the more you know about them and the more you follow the conditions, then you create a superhighway between your left and your right brain rather than like a dirt road that we have right now. And so those connections get much clearer and much cleaner and much faster, just like a muscle that's being used. And so therefore they occur more readily. So you can't demand it to have it at that moment, but you will the wisdom will come in faster and you will be more sure of it.
Okay, so you create a balance between the two then, that literal sense and that emotional sense.
Yes, you need cognitive and intuition. Both.
Yeah.
The left brain is cognitive, the right brain is intuition, and either one by itself doesn't work. Jill Bolte Taylor in My Stroke of Insight, you know, it was in heaven, but she couldn't function in the world. So, and the opposite is true. We need a balance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so because when you come down to it, and I think that's what happened with most people, then the way you can tell if somebody's left brain is if they're very literal about things. You know, they take it, you say it, and that's the way they heard it, and that's the end of it. And with somebody on the other side of that is, what did you mean by what you say? They had their experience to what they have coming in. And I think that in and of itself in communication is a real stumbling block for the majority of people.
Absolutely is. And of course, as an educator, that's where I come in with teachers or education, trying to show that we need to have the balance of both because our schools are so designed for the left brain, you know, and not the right brain, and more so as we try and get test scores raising and so on and so forth. We need the balance, absolutely, for those higher level thinking skills, and that's what America has yet to offer. We don't have manufacturing. We don't have the other things. We have problem solving. We have ideas. We have inventions. We have innovations. That's who we are, so our students need to be, you know, learning how to think in higher level thinking skills and so on.
No, well, that's kind of interesting because the more, and I don't want to get off subject here, but the more I see kids today, everybody's on the computer or the iPad or the whatever, and it seems like it's euphoric. You can't talk to anybody anymore. They're typing on whatever, and from what I heard, and stop me if I'm wrong here, that they're going to stop teaching handwriting in the schools. They don't need it anymore.
Oh, they have, and most places no longer teach cursive, correct?
Yeah, and which means if you don't have your computer, you're in trouble.
Well, and you also, for instance, I have a niece that is dyslexic, and she can't spell. And so she really has a hard time living in this world of where you have to write a word to be able to get anywhere because she can't spell it out. So there are stumbling blocks, you know, for everybody, but, you know.
Oh, no question. I hear it loud and clear. Janice, we're just about out of time now. Do you have a website we can find you and the book?
Yes, absolutely. It's at janicefletcher.com. That's pretty easy. JANICEFletcher.com.
Wonderful. Hey, Janice, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Happy New Year. Bye-bye. I can